Begin this cassette by adjusting the balance control to the full left position. If using the book cassette adapter, place it in the A position.
The Nang Tong started lifting blankets. The goats were tethered. The Si Dok headed for their prizes. The guards thunked Zed and Ann on the head as the Si Dok approached, apparently in warning not to spoil the deal. Zed had no intention of spoiling the deal. The Si Dok didn't sacrifice people. As far as he knew, they were gentle people. The worst punishment they dispensed to someone who committed a grievous wrong was banishment. A banished Si Dok sometimes starved to death because he was so heartsick at being sent from the only home he knew. A misbehaving child was set straight by everyone ignoring him for a day. It was a horrifying punishment to a Si Dok child and resulted in best behavior for a good long time after. Of course, Zed and Ann weren't members of the Si Dok community, so it was entirely possible, in fact, probable, that such treatment didn't extend to them. Zed leaned toward Ann and whispered,
"I don't think these people would hurt us, so keep that in mind. If they decide not to take us, the Nang Tong may just slit our throats rather than have to suffer the humiliation of having to return with two crazy people. First you want me to play in the mud, and now you want me to be a good little girl?"
Zed smiled at her sarcasm.
"Just until our new keepers take us away from the old."
The Si Dok elder, the one with the rabbit fur over his head, squatted before his new acquisitions. He reached out and felt Zed's arm muscles. He grunted disapprovingly. He felt Anne's arms and made a sound as if pleased at what he found. Anne lifted an eyebrow to Zed.
"Seems I'm more agreeable to them than his skinny old man."
Zed smiled.
"I think they find you better suited as a human oxen. They'll give you the hard work."
Her satisfied expression vanished.
"What do you mean?"
He shushed her. Another Si Dok squatted down beside the elder. He had goat antlers fixed to his head. He wore what had to be 100 necklaces over his buckskin tunic. The necklaces, some hanging to his crotch, others tight at his throat, and the rest every length in between, held teeth, beads, bones, feathers, pottery shards, metal discs, gold coins, small leather pouches, and carved amulets. He was the Si Dok shaman. The shaman took Zed's hand and gently held his arm out. He released it. Zed let it drop. The shaman chattered his disapproval. Zed understood enough to gather that he was supposed to hold his arm up. He didn't let on that he understood any of the words, and instead let the shaman lift the arm out again and use a hand signal to indicate he meant Zed to hold it there. While the Nang Tong guards still held spears on the two prisoners, the shaman retrieved long, coiled stalks of grass from one of the pouches at his waist. He chanted as he wove the grass around Zed's wrist. When finished, he wove the grass around Zed's other wrist and then did the same to Anne.
"Any idea what this is about?" she asked.
"It binds our magic. The Nang Tong need do nothing to render our magic useless, but the Si Dok have to use some kind of magic of their own to suppress ours. This shaman is a man of magic. He has the gift. He's something like the Si Dok's wizard."
Zed glanced at her out of the corner of his eye.
"Or maybe you could say he's like the Sisters of the Light with their collars. Like the collars, we won't be able to get these wristbands off."
Once they had the grass woven around their wrists, the Nang Tong withdrew their weapons, picked up their portion of the blankets, collected their two goats, and quickly made good their escape. The elder, the one with the rabbit skin on his head, leaned toward Zed and spoke. When Zed frowned and shrugged that he didn't understand, the man added sign language seemingly invented on the spot. He indicated chores to be done, and time by showing the seasons, digging at the ground and pretending to plant, the heat of summer and the freezing of winter. Zed couldn't understand a great deal of it, but he understood enough. He turned to Anne.
"I believe that these fellows here have purchased us out of our death sentence. We are to be in servitude to them for a period of about 2 years to repay them for our cost, plus a profit for their trouble."
"You've been sold into slavery?"
"It would appear so, but only for a couple of years. Quite generous of them, actually, considering that the Nang Tong were going to kill us."
"Maybe we could buy our way out."
"To the Si Dok, this is a personal debt we owe them, and can only be repaid with personal servitude. To their way of looking at it, They have returned our lives to us, and so we must use part of those lives to show our gratitude, and to clean up after them.
Clean up? We're to scrub floors to repay our debt?
I imagine they'll want us to cook, carry things, sew, care for their animals, those sorts of things.
As if to confirm what Zed had told her, the Sidok began pulling the thongs holding their waterskins off over their heads and passing them to Zed and Anne.
What do they want?
Anne asked him. Zed lifted an eyebrow.
They want us to carry their water.
Three more of the Sidok appeared with the remaining blankets, divided them, and handed them to their new bearers.
Do you mean to tell me,
Anne growled,
that the first wizard of the Midlands and the prelate of the Sisters of the Light have been sold into slavery for the price of some blankets and two goats?
With a shove from behind, Zed staggered after the departing Sidok.
I know what you mean,
he said over his shoulder.
For the first time I know of, the Sidok have overpaid.
Zed stumbled and dropped half his load of waterskins. As he regained his balance, he stepped on one that had snagged a thorny berry bush. Bending to retrieve the waterskins, his stack of blankets toppled into the mud puddle created by the burst waterskin. He put a knee to the ground to regain his balance as he gathered up the scattered waterskins. His knee squashed the berries under the blanket.
Whoops!
He waved an apology to the Sidok.
Sorry.
The Sidok leaped about in agitation, demanding he pick everything up at once. The man whose waterskin Zed had ripped open over a thorn bush pointed angrily at his damaged property while jabbering demands of recompense.
I said I was sorry,
Zed protested, even though they couldn't understand him. He bent to gather up the wet blankets. He lifted one up high and held it out between his widespread arms, inspecting it.
Oh, dear. Look at that. We'll never get that stain out.
Chapter 46
Milord Rawl, you have had a hard ride,
Verdine said.
I think you should be resting. We should go back. So you can rest, I mean.
The massive rampart, lit by the mellow light of the low sun, spread out before the three of them like a broad road. He wanted to be out of the keep before dark. Not that the light of day would save him from dangerous magic, but somehow being in the wizard's keep after dark seemed worse. Rayna leaned past him to speak.
It was your idea, Verdine.
My idea? I never suggested any such thing.
Quiet, both of you, Richard murmured.
He was considering the feel of magic against his skin.
They had advanced halfway across the long rampart toward the first wizard's private enclave before the distinct caress of magic began tingling against his flesh. Both Mord Sith had balked at its feel.
Colin had told him about this place, about the first wizard's private enclave. She said that she used to come up to this rampart because it provided a beautiful view of Adendril, and indeed there was that, but there was also the magic of powerful shields. Those shields kept everyone out of this small corner of the wizard's keep. Colin had told him that in her life there had never been a wizard with enough power to pass these shields. Wizards had tried, but failed. The wizards, living and working in the keep as Colin was growing up, simply didn't have the magic required to enter this part of it. Zed was the first wizard. No one had been in the first wizard's enclave since before Colin and Richard were born, when Zed had left the Midlands. Colin had said that these shields exerted more magic as you got closer, that they made your hair stand on end and made it difficult to breathe. She had also said that if a person didn't have enough magic of their own, just getting too close to the shields could be deadly. Richard didn't discount in the slightest what she had said, but he had need to go in there. Colin had also said that to enter required placing your hand on the cold metal plate beside the door, something no wizard she knew had ever been able to do. Richard had encountered shields like this one at the Palace of the Prophets, ones passed by touching a metal plate, but as far as he knew, none of those were potentially deadly. He had been able to pass those shields, and he had been able to pass others in the keep that required magic only he possessed, so he reasoned that he might be able to pass this one. He needed to get in there. Verdine rubbed her arms, distressed by the tingle of the magic.
Are you sure you aren't tired? You rode all that way.
It wasn't that hard a ride, Richard said. I'm not tired.
He was too worried to rest. He had thought Colin would be back by now.
He had been sure he would find her back home when he returned from Mount Kimmermost. She should have been back by now. But she wasn't. He would wait only until morning.
"I still don't think we should be doing this," Verdine muttered. "How is your foot? I don't think you should be on it."
Richard finally looked down at her. She was pressed up against his left side. Raina was pressed to his right. Each held her Aegil in her fist. "My foot is just fine, thank you." He shifted his body to force them away a bit, to give himself breathing room. "I only need one of you. No loss of face if you wish to remain here. Raina can go if you don't want to."
Verdine scowled up at him. "I didn't say I wasn't going. I said you shouldn't be doing it."
"I have to. It wasn't anywhere else. It has to be here. I was told that important things, things not meant to be seen by just anyone, were kept in the First Wizard's Enclave."
Verdine rolled her shoulders, easing the tension in her muscles. "If you insist on going, then I'm going too. I'll not let you walk in there without me."
"Raina?" he asked. "I don't need both of you. Do you want to wait here?"
Raina gave him a dark, Mord Sith glare in answer.
"All right, then. Now, listen to me. I know that the shields here are dangerous, but that's all I know about them. They may not be like the others I've taken you through. I have to touch that metal plate down there on the wall. I want you two to wait here while I go see if I have the proper magic to open the door. If it opens, then you both can come the rest of the way."
"This isn't a trick, is it?"
Raina asked.
"You tricked us one other time to keep us out, to keep us from going where there was danger. Mord Sith are not afraid of danger."
The wind lifted his gold cloak. "No, Raina, it's not a trick. This is important, but I don't want either of you risking your lives needlessly. If I can open the door, then I promise to take you both with me. Satisfied?"
Both women nodded. Richard gave them each an appreciative squeeze on the shoulder. He absently adjusted the metal bands on his wrists as he gazed at the towering bastion waiting at the end of the rampart. A cold wind buffeted him as he started across. He could feel the pressure of the shield like the weight of water when you swam toward the bottom of a pond. The fine hairs at the back of his neck stiffened as he progressed. The pressure made it difficult but not impossible to draw a breath, as Colin had said she had experienced. 6 immense columns of variegated red stone stood to each side of the gold-clad door, holding up a protruding entablature of dark stone. The architrave was decorated with brass plaques. As Richard approached it, he recognized some of their symbols as the same ones on his wristbands, belt, and boot pins. The frieze held round metal discs with other of the more circular symbols. The more linear of symbols he wore were also carved into the stone of the cornice. Seeing the symbols he recognized reassured him, even though he didn't know their meaning. He wore these things by obligation, duty, and right. He was born to them, that much he knew. Why, he didn't know. Even if he wished it could be otherwise, it wasn't. He was a war wizard. Distracted by the uncomfortable pressure and tingling of the shields, he reached the door almost before he realized it. The door was at least 12 feet tall and a good 4 feet wide, gold-clad and embellished in the same symbolic motifs. Embossed in the center was the more prominent of the symbols he wore, 2 rough triangles with a sinuous double line running around and through them. Richard rested his left hand on the hilt of his sword as he fingered the symbol with his other hand, tracing its oval, undulating outer margin. With the act of touching it, tracing it, following its pattern, he understood. The spirits who had used the Sword of Truth before him passed their knowledge on to him as he used the sword, but they didn't always convey that knowledge in words. In the heat of combat, there wasn't always time. Sometimes it came to him in images. Symbols, these symbols. This one on the door, like the ones on his wristbands, was a kind of dance used for fighting when outnumbered. It conveyed a sense of the movements of the dance, movements without form. The dance with death. It made sense. He wore the outfit of a war wizard. Richard had learned from Kolo's journal that in Kolo's time, the first wizard, named Barakas, had also been a war wizard, as was Richard. These symbols had meaning to a war wizard.
much as a tailor painted shears on his window, or a tavern sign had a mug on it, or a blacksmith nailed up horseshoes, or a weapons maker displayed knives. These symbols were signs of his craft, bringing death. Richard realized that his fear had vanished. He stood in the wizard's keep, which had always before set his nerves on edge, and worse. Stood now before the most restricted and protected place in the keep, yet he felt calm. He touched a starburst symbol on the door. This symbol was an admonition. Keep your vision all-inclusive, never allowing it to lock on any one thing. That was the meaning of the starburst symbol. Look everywhere at once, see nothing to the exclusion of all else. Don't allow the enemy to direct your vision, or you will see what he wishes you to see. He will then come at you as you become bewildered, looking for his attack, and you will lose. Instead, your vision must open to all there is, never settling, even when cutting. Know your enemy's moves by instinct, not by waiting to see them. To dance with death meant to know the enemy's sword and its speed without waiting to see it. Dancing with death meant being one with the enemy, without looking fixedly so that you could kill him. Dancing with death meant being committed to killing, committed with your heart and soul. Dancing with death meant that you were the incarnation of death, come to reap the living. Verdine's voice drifted across the rampart.
Lord Wall?
Richard looked over his shoulder. What? What's wrong? Verdine shifted her weight to her other foot.
Well, are you all right? You've been standing there for a long time, staring at the door. Are you all right?
Richard wiped a hand across his face. Yes, I'm fine. I was just looking at the things written on the door, that's all. He turned, and without thinking, slapped his hand to the cold metal plate in the polished gray granite wall. Colin had told him it was said that to touch that metal plate was like touching the cold, dead heart of the keeper himself. The metal plate warmed. The gold door silently swung inward. Dim light came from beyond. Richard took a careful step into the doorway. Like a wick on a lamp being slowly turned up, the dim light coming from inside brightened. He took another step, and the light brightened more. He scanned the inside as he motioned the two waiting Mord Sith forward. Whatever magic prevented people from approaching apparently was now withdrawn. Verdine and Rayna walked to him without any difficulty.
That wasn't so bad, Rayna said. I didn't feel anything.
So far, so good, Richard said. Inside there were glass spheres, about a hand width in diameter, set atop green marble pedestals against the wall to his left and right. Richard had seen glass spheres similar to these before, down in the lower reaches of the keep. Like those, these too provided light. The inside of the first wizard's enclave was an immense cavern of ornate stonework. Four columns of polished black marble, at least 10 feet in diameter, formed a square that supported arches just beyond the outer edges of a central dome dotted by a high ring of windows. Between each pair of columns, a wing ran off from the vast central chamber. He noticed that much of the stonework repeated the palm leaf pattern that adorned the gold capitals atop the black marble columns. The polishing of the marble was so high that it reflected images like glass. Finely worked, wrought iron sconces decorated with the same palm leaf pattern held candles. Fluidly worked, iron-formed railings at the edge of the expansive, sunken central floor. This was not the sinister lair Richard expected. This was a place of grand splendor to match any he had seen. The place was so beautiful that it left him awe-stricken. The wing in which the three of them stood, the entry hall, appeared to be by far the smallest of the four wings. 6-foot-tall white marble pedestals marched in a long double row beside the walkway laid with a long red carpet over a gold-flecked dark brown marble floor. Richard wouldn't have been able to touch fingers were he to put his arms around one of the pedestals. The ribbed barrel ceiling 30 feet overhead made the fat pedestals look minuscule. Sitting atop some of the pedestals were objects Richard recognized. Ornate knives, gems set in brooches or at the ends of gold-worked chains, a silver chalice, filigree bowls, and delicately worked boxes. Some sat on squares of cloth trimmed with gold or silver embroidery, others on stands carved from burled wood. Other pedestals held contorted objects that made no sense to him. He would have sworn that they changed shape when he looked at them. He decided it would be best not to look directly at such things of magic, and warn the other two. The distant wing opposite them, across the central area under the huge dome, ended at a round-topped window that had to be 30 feet tall. Before the window was a huge table piled with a clutter of objects, glass jars, bowls, and coiled tubes, a massive but simple iron candelabrum covered with ages of wax, stacks of scrolls, several human skulls, and a chaos of smaller items Richard couldn't make out from such a distance. The floor all around the table was similarly cluttered, along with things stacked up and leaning against the table. The wing to the right was dark. Richard felt uncomfortable even looking in that direction. He heeded the warning and looked to the left. In that wing, he saw books. Thousands of them. "There," Richard said as he gestured to the left. "That's what we're here for. Remember what I told you. Don't touch anything." He glanced at them both as they looked about with wide eyes. "I mean it. I don't know how to save you if you get in trouble touching something in here." Both pairs of eyes looked back at him.
"We remember," Verdine said. "We know better than to tempt magic," Rayna said. "We're just looking around, that's all. We wouldn't touch anything."
"Good. But I suggest that you don't even look at anything either except what we need to look at. For all I know, simply looking at something in here could trigger its magic."
"Do you think?"
Rayna asked in astonishment. "What I think is that I'd rather not find out after it's too late. Come on, let's get this over with so we can get out of here."
Oddly, even though he had said the words and knew they made sense, he didn't really feel like leaving. As potentially dangerous as he knew the place to be, he found that he liked the First Wizard's Enclave. Verdine smirked. "Lord Rahl fears magic as much as we do."
"You're wrong, Verdine. I know a little about magic." He started down the red carpet. "I fear it more."
10 broad steps at the end led down into the central area. An expanse of cream-colored marble covered the floor. A border of darker brown marble ran around the floor near the edge. When Richard reached the bottom step and his foot touched the floor, it hummed and began to glow. He quickly retreated back up onto the red carpet. The glow extinguished.
"What now?"
Rayna asked. He pried her fingers from his arm.
"Did either of you put your foot to the floor?"
They both shook their heads.
"Try."
As Richard waited on the step, Verdine gingerly tried to test the marble. She withdrew her foot.
"I can't. Something stops my foot before I can get it on the floor."
Richard stepped out onto the marble again. Again it glowed and hummed.
"It must be a shield, then. Here, take my hand and try again."
Holding Richard's hand, Verdine was able to step onto the marble with him. Rayna took his other hand and followed.
"All right," he said. "Since it's some kind of shield, don't let go of my hand while we're on this part. We don't know what would happen. For all I know, if you let go of my hand, you could fry like bacon on a griddle."
Their grips on his hands tightened. As they stepped onto the steps up to the wing with the books, the floor went silent. Without Richard to hold their hands on the way out, they would be trapped inside this place, unable to return across the central floor. The wing with the books wasn't the kind of library he had expected. There were rows of shelves, but they were in disarray, with books stacked every which way. Chunks of rock served as bookends for the few standing upright among the disorder. Here and there, books were in piles, as if someone had pulled them from the shelves and simply tossed them in a heap. Most were closed, but a significant number lay open, some face up, some face down. But that wasn't the biggest surprise. Everywhere, it seemed, there were books stacked up on the floor. A few stacks were short, maybe 3 or 4 feet tall, but many more were tall pillars of books. Some of the irregular stacks towered 12 or 14 feet. They looked as if the mere act of breathing could make them topple. The columns of books were everywhere, creating a maze. Richard couldn't fathom the reason for the books being stacked in such disarray,
but the mystery of it made him sweat. Richard took an arm of each woman. My grandfather told me that there were books in the keep that were extremely dangerous. Colin told me that the most dangerous things were kept in here, where no one could get to them, not even the wizard she knew.
Radin shot him a look. You mean you think that the books themselves could be dangerous? Not just the information in them, but the actual books?
Richard thought of the description of a book that Sister Amelia had used to start the plague. I'm not sure, but we had better treat them as such. Look, but don't touch.
Verdine's brow drew down with a dubious frown. Lord Rawl, there must be thousands of books I can see just standing here. There are bound to be more down the aisles. It will take us weeks to find the one we want, if it's even here.
Richard took a deep breath. Verdine was right. He hadn't expected to find so many books in here. He thought the libraries held most of the books, and there would only be a few in here.
If you want to be out of here before dark, we don't have long,
Raina said. We might as well come back tomorrow and get an early start. Richard was beginning to feel intimidated by the task ahead. We'll just have to stay after dark. We'll stay all night if we have to.
Raina rolled her aegil in her fingers. If you say so, Lord Rawl.
Richard's heart sank as he stood staring at the forest of books. He needed information, not a search for one leaf in a forest. If only he could use magic to find that one leaf. He idly adjusted the bands at his wrist. Under his fingers, he felt the starburst pattern on one of them. Look without fixing your sight.
I have an idea, he said. Wait here, I'll be right back.
Richard returned to the pillars. He went to one that held a crackled glass bowl upon a large square of black cloth.
What good is that going to do?
Raina asked when he came back holding the cloth out for them.
There's too much to see. I'm going to use this as a blindfold so I won't see all the things I don't want to see.
Radin's face twisted with incredulity.
If you're blindfolded, then how are you going to see the thing we're looking for?
With magic. I'm going to try to let my gift guide me. Sometimes it works that way. Through need. All these books are too confusing. If I'm blindfolded, I won't see them, and I'll be able to feel the one I'm looking for. At least, that's what I hope.
Raina gazed out over all the books.
Well, you are the Lord Rawl. You have magic. If it has a chance of getting us out of spending the night in here, then I say do it.
Richard placed the black cloth over his eyes and began tying its tails behind his head.
Just guide me and keep me from touching anything. Don't forget what I said about you two not touching anything either.
Don't worry about us, Lord Rawl, Raina said. We're not about to touch anything.
When he finished tying the blindfold over his eyes, Richard turned his head this way and that, testing to make sure that he couldn't see. He rubbed a finger over the starburst on his wristband. His world was pitch black. He sought the inner peace, the inner calm, where dwelled his gift. If the plague was started by magic from the Temple of the Winds, then maybe they had a chance to halt it. If he did nothing, then untold thousands of people were going to die. He needed that book. He thought about the boy he had watched die, about the little girl, Lily, who told him about the Sister of the Dark showing her the book. That was how the plague started. He knew it was. That precious child had the tokens on her. Richard hadn't inquired, but he knew that she, at least, would be dead by now. He couldn't bear to inquire. He needed that book. He put a foot out.
Nudge me with your fingers if I'm about to run into anything. Try not to talk, but if you must, don't be afraid to speak up.
He felt their fingers lightly touch his arm as he stepped forward. They guided him with that touch, keeping him from colliding with the towering stacks of books as he waded deeper into the maze. Richard didn't know what it was he should feel. He didn't know if it was magic, a hunch, or his imagination guiding him. By the way he seemed to be winding up and down aisles and snaking through the stacks, he feared it was no more than his imagination. He tried to ignore the things that kept his thoughts skipping about and running in every direction. He tried to concentrate on the book and his need to find it. Thinking of the sick children, he was able to focus better. They needed him. They were helpless. Richard felt himself jerked to a halt. He wondered why. He turned left when he expected that he was going to turn right. It had to be the gift. With that thought, his thoughts scattered in every direction again. He focused once more. The two moored Sith forcibly snatched his arm to halt him. He understood. Another step and he would have collided with the stack. Wondering which way he would be turned, he found himself squatting instead. His arm lifted and he reached out.
"Careful," Verdeen whispered. "It's a big, irregular stack. Be careful or you'll knock it over."
Richard nodded, not wanting to distract himself by answering with words. He was concentrating on feeling the object of his need. He felt it near. His fingers lightly brushed the books running down the stack, touching the bindings of some and the pages of others because they were turned around the other way. His fingers stopped on a binding. "This one." He tapped the leather binding. "This one, what does it say?" Verdeen propped a hand on his thigh to support herself as she leaned in.
"It's Kai Daharan, something about the Temple of the Winds. Tagen Richt aus für most Berlaschendreck nicht Greschlechten."
"Temple of the Winds, Inquisition and Trial," Richard translated in a whisper. "We found it." Chapter 47.
"Breathe,"
the Sliff said. Colin let go the silken essence and pulled the deep breath of the alien air. The dim world of the Sliff's well down in the keep whirled in around her. Stone of the walls and floor finally settled in her vision. The dome overhead seemed to slow its spinning. Something unexpected waited in the Sliff's room. Tilted back in the chair, with her feet propped up on the table, sat a figure in red leather. Colin sat down, dangling her feet over the edge of the stone wall to gather her senses. The front legs of the chair thunked down.
"Well, well, the wandering mother confessor returns at last."
Colin hopped down onto the floor. She almost lost her footing with the way it seemed to twist and tilt.
"Kara, what are you doing down here?"
Kara gripped Colin under her arm. "You better sit down until you regain your feet."
"I'm all right."
Colin glanced over her shoulder to the silver face behind her.
"Thank you, Sliff."
"Do you wish to travel?"
The Sliff's haunting voice echoed off the walls and dome overhead for a long moment.
"No. I've had enough traveling for the time being. I'm going to stay here."
"When you wish to travel, call me, and we will travel. You will be pleased."
"I don't know about that," Colin muttered as the Sliff seemed to melt back into her well.
"She's a spooky companion to have down here," Kara said. "She invited me to travel with her too, and then told me I didn't have the magic required. She comes and stares at me with that eerie smile."
"Kara, what are you doing down here?"
Kara leaned Colin back against the Sliff's well. She gave Colin the strangest look as she shook her head to herself.
"When Lord Rahl read your letter, it didn't take him long to figure out what you had done. Verdeen told him how you had brought us here to look for that book on the trial record. He came down here, but the Sliff wouldn't tell him where she had taken you. Lord Rahl said that now that he knew the Sliff was not sleeping, as he had thought, it wasn't safe to leave her alone. He said that others, like the sister and Marlin, could come through."
Colin hadn't thought about that, about another one of Jagang's minions coming to Adendril through the Sliff. The Sliff seemed to have no loyalty. She would travel with anyone who had the required price of magic.
"So Richard left you here?"
"He said he couldn't remain down here all the time to guard the Sliff."
Kara's chin lifted with pride.
"He said that a moored Sith must guard the well at all times, since we have the power to stop someone with magic. The Lord Rahl has always used the moored Sith to protect him against magic."
The wizards of old obviously had this same problem with the Sliff, and had left wizards like Kolo down here to guard her. Kolo said that the enemy sometimes arrived suddenly by way of the Sliff, and that only the quick reactions of the one on guard had prevented disaster.
"You mean he brought you down here and just left you?"
"No, he searched for hours until he found a way without magic so we could get down here on our own. He didn't want to have to bring each of us down here for our turn, and he didn't want us trapped down here either. We have to take shifts. I don't like it, because we should be close to Lord Rahl in order to guard him, not this silver thing. But I guess that we are guarding Lord Rahl by doing this, so I agreed to it."
Colin found her feet steady at last.
"If we had known the Sliff was awake and had been guarding her before, then Marlin wouldn't have been able to come to try to assassinate Richard,
and the sister wouldn't have been able to start the plague. Colin's chest constricted with a hot, cutting pang of regret. They could have prevented the whole thing. All the awful things she had learned would not be threatening her people, her world, and her love. The realization of the chance lost left her nauseous. Lord Rawl also wanted us to wait until your return from the witch woman, in case you needed help.
Richard knew where I went?
The slip wouldn't tell him, but he said he knew anyway. He said you went to the witch woman.
He knew? And he didn't chase after me?
Kara pulled her long blonde braid over her shoulder.
I was surprised, too. I asked him why he wouldn't go after you.
He said that he loved you. He did not own you.
Really? Richard said that?
Yes. A smirk tightened Kara's lips.
You are training him well, Mother Confessor.
I approve. And then he kicked a chair. I think he hurt his foot, but he denies it.
So Richard is angry with me?
Kara rolled her eyes.
Mother Confessor, this is Richard we are talking about? The man is fool in love with you. He wouldn't be angry with you if you told him to marry Nadine instead of you.
Colin swallowed at the renewed twist of pain.
Why would you say that?
Kara frowned.
I only meant he could never be angry with you, no matter what. You were supposed to laugh, not jump like I had poked you with my Aegeel. Mother Confessor, he loves you. He is worried sick, but he is not angry with you.
What about kicking the chair? Kara stroked her long blonde braid and smirked again.
He claimed the chair gave him just cause.
I see. Colin couldn't seem to find pleasure in Kara's sense of humor.
How long have I been gone?
Not quite 2 days, and I expect you to tell me how you managed to slip past those Dharan guards out there by the bridge. It was snowing, they didn't see me. Kara didn't look to believe it. She was giving Colin that odd look again.
And did you kill the witch woman?
No. Colin changed the subject. What has Richard been doing while I was gone?
Well, first he asked the Slif to take him to the Temple of the Winds, but she said she didn't know that place and couldn't take him there, so he rode to Mount Kimmermost.
He went there? Colin snatched Kara's arm.
What did he find?
Nothing. He said that there was nothing to find. He said that if the Temple of the Winds was once there, it is now gone. Colin released Kara's arm.
He went to Mount Kimmermost, and he's back already?
You know Lord Rawl. When he gets something in his head, he charges after it. The men who went with him said they rode hard. They slept little and rode much of the night. Lord Rawl expected you to return last night and wanted to be back for you. When you did not return as expected, he paced and fretted, but still he did not go after you. Whenever he looked like he was about to change his mind, he read your letter again and went back to pacing instead.
I guess my letter was a little strong,
Colin said as she glanced down at the floor.
Lord Rawl showed it to me.
Kara's face was unreadable.
Sometimes it is necessary to threaten men, or they get to thinking that they are the ones who say what will be. You dissuaded him of that idea with your threats.
I didn't threaten him. Colin thought that her tone sounded too much like a plea. Kara watched Colin's eyes for a moment.
You are probably right. The chair must have given Lord Rawl cause, as he said.
I did what I had to do. Richard would understand that.
I guess I'd better go explain it to him.
Kara gestured behind to the door.
You just missed him. He was here not long ago.
He came to see if I was back?
Oh, he must be worried sick.
Radin told him about the book you were searching for. He came here and found it. Colin blinked in astonishment.
He found it? But we looked. It wasn't there. How did he find it?
He went to a place he called the First Wizard's Enclave and found it there. Colin's jaw dropped.
He went in there?
He went into the First Wizard's Enclave? Alone? Without me?
He shouldn't have gone there. That's a dangerous place.
Really? Kara folded her arms. And of course you would never do anything so foolish as to get it in your head to go run off alone to a dangerous place. Maybe you should reprimand Lord Rawl for his impulsive behavior, since you are so prudent and above such reckless conduct yourself. The echo of Kara's voice lingered uncomfortably before it died out. Colin understood. Even though Richard did as she had asked by not coming after her, Kara had tried. Even though she didn't like magic, Kara had tried to go to protect Colin.
Kara, she said in a meek voice, I'm sorry I tricked you, too.
Kara shrugged, but still showed no emotion.
I am just a guard. You have no obligation to me.
Yes, I do. You are not just a guard. You may be our protector, but you are more. I consider you my friend. You are a sister of the Aegil. I should have told you what I was doing, but I feared that if I did, Richard would be angry with you for not stopping me. I didn't want that.
Kara said nothing. Still, she showed no emotion. Colin breached the uncomfortable silence.
Kara, I'm sorry. I guess I was afraid you would try to stop me.
I tricked you. You're a sister of the Aegil. I should have trusted you and taken you into my confidence.
Please, Kara, I was wrong. I beg you, forgive me.
A smile finally spread on Kara's face.
We are sisters of the Aegil. I forgive you.
Colin managed a small smile.
Do you think Richard will be as understanding as you?
Kara let out an amused grunt.
Well, you have better ways to persuade him to forgive you. It is not so difficult to melt a man's frown.
I only wish I had good news so I could bring a smile to his face, but I don't.
She paused at the doorway.
What has Nadine been up to while I've been gone?
This is the end of Side 1, Part B. There is no need to change the balance control. Simply turn this cassette to Side 2 and continue with Part B.